The Medieval Weapons Club by Destiny's Wisdom, read by CookieMom6067. This is not the first time Joe has been caught somewhere he shouldn't be, armed with a sword. He's not caught often, but after almost 1,000 years of sneaking into and out of places armed with every possible kind of weapon, of course it's happened a few times. Maybe a few more than he'd like. He tries to fly under the radar when he can, and is by now well practiced at it. Blending in is an art form he has perfected over his many years, but he is still human, and will therefore never be perfect at it. Today had been especially last minute, and while the plan in had been perfected from habit and experience alone, the plan home had been more or less non-existent. So when a red head of hair turns the corner towards him, he shoves his gun into the waistband of his pants and tries to shove his sword behind his back. He gets the gun away fine, but of course the owner of the red hair turns the corner into their line of sight, and she spots his other weapon immediately. It's hardly Joe's fault. A scimitar is not an easy thing to hide. "Oh my God!" she squeals, both hands coming to her mouth in a dramatic gasp. She's young, alone, and unarmed. Probably a student. She is very obviously not a threat, but he can't help stepping half in front of Nikki anyway. "We won't hurt you," he tries, raising his free hand in front of him and trying to look harmless. It would work better with both hands and no sword, but the scimitar is a few hundred years old now and one of his favorites, and he's loath to lose it. It won't help anyway. It's the middle of the night on an otherwise deserted university campus, the one he's currently working at. He'd found himself in an embarrassingly similar circumstances too many times before, and he's never pulled off reassuring. Her wide eyes leave the sword, startled, and flick to his face and then to Nikki's, back to the sword, him and Nikki. Then she does it a few more times for good measure. He moves his weight to the balls of his feet, preparing to run for it, and waits for her to scream. He hears Nikki sigh behind him and knows he's doing the same. She seems to notice the way he's standing, half in front of Nikki, and her eyes flick to the empty hand he's holding up in front of him, and then to Nikki's. Some of the tension leaks out of her shoulders, and she turns her full attention to Nikki, eyeing him up and down, not searching for weapons. Is she checking him out? She still hasn't screamed. He tries to stay as still as possible. Something like understanding dawns in her face, and she lets out a small, "Oh!" as she lets her hands fall to her face and calms her beating heart, relaxing. And then she quirks an eyebrow and asks, "Professor Golding?" "Who?" Joe isn't sure what to do with that. This has never happened before. He stands there, staring dumbly, until he realizes she's waiting for a response. Despite his 1,000 years of experience thinking on his feet, all he manages to cough out is a startled, Apparently it's enough, because she immediately starts talking, excitement and a smidge of embarrassment quickly replacing the last bits of fear. "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm Sophie Turner," she babbles, bouncing on her feet a little. Joe is still frozen to the spot and too struck dumb to answer. Sophie doesn't seem to notice. "It's so nice to meet you. I'm taking your medieval history course next term. I tried to take your introductory course this term, but it was already full. Everyone says your classes are the best, Professor Golding." She pauses, waiting for some kind of answer. "Oh," he manages, "I'm not..." He shares a quick look with Nikki, wondering if he should finish that sentence. To deny it would probably lead to screaming, but he's not sure if he should agree. What's the etiquette for getting caught with a big-ass sword and being mistaken for a history professor? Nikki looks just as lost as he does. He raises one shoulder in a half-hearted shrug. Sophie catches the look and immediately misinterprets it. "Oh," she continues, eyes flicking back and forth between Joe and Nikki, apparently completely dismissing the presence of a sword. "I'm so sorry, Professor. I didn't mean to interrupt." She turns bright red, the hue so bright it's visible even in the dim artificial lighting of the courtyard. "I'm sure you have better things to do than be harassed by students. I'll just..." She takes a few steps forward and sidesteps around them, her movements more Awkward, don't let them remember this, and less, I should stay away from the giant weapon that I freaked out about 2 minutes ago and now don't seem to give two shits about. At the last second, Joe has the presence of mind to take a step back to let her pass on the narrow path. She moves past them both and shoots a quick, nice to meet you, over her shoulder before scurrying off. They both stay rooted to the spot for another few minutes, the weapon still firmly clutched in Joe's right hand before Nikki finally breaks the tension. Who the hell is Golding? They pass four other students on their way to the car. At least two of them spot Joe and what he's carrying, but no one reacts. One boy Joe vaguely recognizes from around campus even gives them both a head nod and hey as he walks past, seemingly completely at ease. Like walking around campus armed with a centuries-old weapon is a perfectly normal thing to do. Unwilling to question their luck, they both walk faster. They spend the weekend arguing over whether or not Joe can return to work, the literature teaching position he had taken up in the same university campus they'd just been caught on. They spend some time searching through local news and student forums for any signs of concern or alerts about armed men in the area, finding none. They do a quick search of Professor Golding, too, but other than some student reviews that Joe would think were made up if not for the strange circumstances of his name being mentioned, multiple mentions of a raven Joe thinks has to be a metaphor, and one post that just reads, "Ask him about Shakespeare," which almost 100 people have liked but no one has commented on, there's not much. The man's been at the university for the last 5 years, teaching various courses of history and apparently lives a 20-minute walk off campus. When Nikki looks up his address, the building title in his name comes up to, he finds a pub. There's no photo. They debate looking into him further, but ultimately decide standing next to the man might lead Sophie closer to identifying him if she ever figures out her mistake. Not worth the risk. Joe goes back to work on the caveat that Nikki sticks close to campus for a few days. No one raises any alarms when he enters the building, and he texts Nikki the all clear and goes about his morning lecture without issue. He doesn't hear the name again for another week. He's running late for his lecture and flustered from a last-minute change in venue, his usual building closed for some electrical work, and displacing the entire literature department. Luckily, the students are as thrown off as the lecturers are, and they're still streaming in when he finally finds the correct lecture hall and dumps his bag on the table. When he hears a tap-tap-tap noise from the window to his left, he's immediately concerned it's another electrical issue. So when he turns to face the window, it takes him a second to register what he's seeing. Sitting on the window, still directly across from his desk, is a bird. A big, black bird. A crow? The tap, tap, tap sounds again as he raises his beak to the glass. Joe blinks at the bird. The bird taps on the glass again. He has not had enough coffee for this. Joe approaches the window with his arms out and tries to shoo the creature off. It doesn't move. Go on, he tries. Shoo! The bird tilts his head at Joe, and Joe gets the distinct impression that it's unimpressed with him. Giving up, he turns back to his desk. The tapping starts again. Joe opens the window with the intention of scaring it off, but of course it ducks under the opening and flies straight past him, landing on the desk. Holy shit! A student in the front row lets out a squeal, startling so badly they almost tumble backward out of their chair. Ouch! Shoo! Joe tries again, waving his arms closer to the desk. The bird doesn't move. Great. What now? Is that Matthew? A voice pipes up from the back of the room. Joe turns to face his now mostly full classroom, the last of the students finally trickling in. The students not staring at the bird are staring at a scrawny blonde kid in the back row all the way up the stairs. Matthew? Joe mirrors, confused. In the corner of his eye, he sees the bird tilt its head. It totally is, chimes in another student, a girl in a hoodie slumped back in her seat. They named him? Does this classroom come with a bird or something? Another two students walk through the door close to the desk. They nod to Joe and then to Matthew as they walk past, apparently not concerned with the bird's presence. Oh, hey, the second student exclaims, coming to a sudden stop in the walkway as if he's just registered what's in front of him. He turns back to the bird. Professor G ain't here today, man. They moved all the classrooms around. Professor G? The student in the front row who squealed swings around in his seat, staring at the newcomer. Are you talking to the bird? They ask, with an incredulity that matches Joe's. The new kid rolls his eyes like he's been asked something stupid, like it's normal to talk to random birds in university classrooms. His name is Matthew, man. Golding's pet raven? Another voice pipes up. A series of O's and various murmurs of understanding move through the room in a wave, leaving Joe and a handful of other students with matching expressions of confusion. Golding. Who has a pet raven? The kid at the front. I don't think he's his, another student adds. I think he's his husband's. Golding always says he's there to babysit him, a voice in the front row. Why does a bird need a babysitter? Asks another kid. Nah, man, the new kid pipes up. Matthew babysits Golding. Joe realizes he's lost control of the class. Before he can even attempt to get the conversation under control, Matthew lets out a loud caw. All attention turns back to him. Sorry, man, the new kid says, still strangely comfortable talking to the bird. Anyone know which room G-Man's in? He's in Building C, Hoodie Girl provides, sitting up straight in her seat. Second floor somewhere. The new kid nods, turning back to Matthew. That's the next building that way. He points to his left, still addressing the bird. The bird, in turn, lowers his head in a nod and flaps his wings, taking off straight back out of the window. Bye, Matthew. It takes a good 15 minutes for Joe to get the class back on track. He spends the rest of the day trying to figure out how to explain this to Nikki. It's been weeks since the sword incident, but Nikki's still on high alert. They haven't found out much more about Golding, primarily due to a concerted effort not to. Joe's been deliberately avoiding asking any questions of his students and colleagues, well aware of how fast gossip seems to spread on campus, and unwilling to draw any attention to himself. The curiosity is close to getting the better of both of them, and they're meeting today for lunch specifically to discuss a plan to start safely digging. Nikki does a sweep of the perimeter when he arrives, centuries of hypervigilance making him the kind of paranoid Joe would call reasonable. He knows the layout by now, having stayed close for the first week Joe was back here, and makes quick work of it. When he finally deems the building safe to enter, he keeps his head down and sticks to the edges, mapping out escape routes almost on instinct as he goes. So when he enters the same corridor as Sophie Turner, the student that caught them weeks ago, it takes him no time at all to spot her and move behind another group of students, hiding himself. She's standing between him and the staff kitchen he was heading to. He toys with the idea of texting Joe to meet him outside and bolting, but dismisses it quickly. No, they had both agreed their cover was not blown. If Sophie was a danger to them, they would have run already. It's safer to walk past her, maybe gauge her reaction to him, rather than to run. He steels himself with a breath and walks forward. She's deep in conversation with another student and doesn't seem to notice him. Whatever they're talking about, she's clearly losing the argument. Her face is flushed, hands moving wildly as she speaks. I'm telling you, it was totally him, she exclaims. The other student, a tall, skinny kid with pale skin and cropped hair, leaning against the wall, lazily rolls his eyes. No, it wasn't. Professor Golding wasn't here that day, Soph. I told you that. Golding? Oh, no. There's only one thing this conversation can be about. Nikki's almost on top of them now, but neither of them seem to have noticed him. He spots a vending machine just up the hallway and darts past them to duck behind it, pulling out his phone to text Joe, even as he settles in to eavesdrop. It totally was him and his husband. Nikki starts at that, pausing in his texting. Was that him they were talking about? Hot goth guy? The excitement in the other student's voice is evident. He sounds much more interested in the conversation now. Not goth. He can hear the frown in Sophie's voice in the answer. Just hot. Is he usually goth? Should he be flattered? Super goth. You would definitely remember. It totally wasn't him, Soph. Nikki hears her huff. Well, maybe he isn't goth all the time. Maybe he was trying something you don't know. Nope, the other voice argues, popping the P. He's as goth as they get. The man has a raven, for fuck's sake. Nikki feels himself freeze, fingers halfway through a text. His mind floats back to Joe a week ago and his story about a bird in his classroom. I don't know who you met, but it wasn't Golding. He's back to sounding bored. There's a brief spark of panic in Nikki as he realizes they've been found out. Now she knows Joe is not this professor she's somehow mistaken them for. The reaction is quickly overshadowed, however, by her next comment. Well, how the hell was I supposed to know that? She cries, finally conceding the point. You never told me he was goth. I just know he's the sword guy with the hot husband. Nikki can't help but bark out a startled laugh. Is that how they got away with this? Oh, Joe is going to love this. Apparently, he's not the only one who heard the comment. There's a shuffling noise and a chorus of excuse me's, like someone has come to a stop in the middle of the crowded hallway, and a new voice joins the conversation. What was that? Dean Carter, Sophie squeals. The panic returns, and Nikki chances a glance around the corner. There's a stern-faced, middle-aged woman in a neat pencil-skirt and suit jacket staring down Sophie. Anything I should know, Miss Turner? Damn it. This is the part where she spills her guts about two crazy guys she saw wandering the campus the other night, and the police are called, and Nikki and Joe run. Again. But luck seems to somehow still be on their side for this. Sophie only shakes her head. Oh, no, Dean Carter. We were just talking about how excited I am to start Professor Golding's class next term. She nods so vigorously she looks like a bobblehead. Because they're usually full super quickly, but I got a spot this time. Sophie's a terrible liar. It's clear to all present that she's hiding something, but Nikki appreciates the effort even if he has no idea why she's making it. There's a heavy pause as the dean stares her down, but when neither student says anything else, the dean merely purses her lips and nods. Okay, then. And then she's turning on her heel and stalking towards the staff kitchen where Nikki knows for a fact Joe is right now, waiting for him. Shit. He scurries after her. He just catches the other kid's comment as he rushes away. Oh, man. Do you think she's going to cancel the weapons club? Joe is half through a mouthful of his sandwich when the dean storms into the room and straight up to his table and barks out a sharp, What's this I hear about people running around campus with swords? Joe chokes on his food and is half glad for it when it buys him a second to think of an excuse. Oh, God, he has to run again. He's only been at this place for about a month. He quite likes his lectures, the warm classroom, a nice break from the cold and harshness of his usual life as a soldier, and they just found a nice cafe, too. Finally choking down his mouthful, he chances a glance up at the dean, still running through his list of excuses. Over her shoulder, he catches a glimpse of Nikki in the doorway. Nikki knew she had sniffed out something, but until this moment, he didn't have any reason to think she'd found out them specifically. He's floored and terrified that she walks straight up to his husband. They meet eyes for a second, a silent promise to get ready to run, and then he turns his attention back to the dean. The first sign things are not as Joe expects is her expression. The strong lines of her face are arranged in a look of, at most, mild irritation, and not at all the anger or fear he had expected to follow a statement like that. Both hands rest on her hips, and she has one eyebrow raised as if waiting for a response. His second hint is that all of this seems to be directed not at Joe at all, but at the seat across from him. What? Joe's gaze follows the dean's and cuts across the table to take in his lunch companion. Robbie? Joe met him a few days after he started, when he had unwittingly interrupted an apparently common argument between Robbie and one of the English professors about Shakespeare's worth as a playwright. Robbie had startled a laugh out of Joe when he'd called the man a talentless twat, and they'd become common lunch companions and fast friends soon after. He strikes Joe as a kind soul, the kind who laughs often and is quick to help a friend, Joe would not have pegged him as the kind of man to wander around with weapons. He's broad-shouldered, with short dark hair and a wide, square jaw, and is currently frozen to the spot with his mouth hanging open and his spoon hanging halfway between his bowl of soup and his face. He's blinking slowly at the dean, with wide eyes, caught halfway between surprise and sheepishness. He blinks again. Joe knows he's staring, but is unable to do a thing about it right now. He waits for Robbie to deny it, or for the dean to offer some kind of explanation as to why she would hear strange man with sword and come immediately to Robbie. The dean stares him down, her single eyebrow raising slightly higher. Robbie lowers his spoon and rubs the back of his neck. And is he blushing? If this is about the other day with the rapier. You have a rapier? He hadn't meant to say it out loud, but he wants to know now. The fact he said rapier at all instead of just sword immediately has Joe interested. He wonders if it's in good nick and where he got it and why the hell he has it in the first place. Does it sit on his wall as decoration? Some priceless piece of history? Does he know how to use it? He doubts it, but up until 2 minutes ago, he would have doubted he knew what one was. Robbie cuts his eyes to Joe for a second, taking in his shock, and shrugs. Oh, yeah, for my, lectures. Medieval weapons, you know. Robbie shrugs. Something about that tugs at a memory. Beside them, the dean huffs, and Robbie's attention turns back to her. I mean, Robbie continues, trying for a serious tone and landing somewhere closer to sheepish. It won't come out of my office again, unless it's for a lecture, only for the classroom, for educational value. Over her shoulder, Joe sees Nikki slump against the doorway, his jaw almost at the floor. Obviously, he'd caught the conversation. The dean gives Robbie a flat look, the lone eyebrow hiking higher until it's almost in her hairline. Robbie coughs. Sorry? It comes out as a question, accompanied by a pleading look and a nervous smile. The dean narrows her eyes, and Robbie shrinks back into his chair, looking chastised. There's a long pause as all three of them, Nikki, Joe, and Robbie, seem to hold their breath, and then the dean lets out a heavy sigh. You're lucky your students like you, Golding, she huffs, and storms out as quickly as she arrived. Golding? She brushes past Nikki on her way out, who's still staring wide-eyed at Robbie. Robbie Golding. The strange man Sophie had mistaken him for, who apparently walks around campus with swords and may or may not have a pet raven. Robbie seems to catch Joe's slack-jawed stare, and he blushes an even deeper red. Sorry, he stutters out, ducking his head. I teach a course on medieval history, and it comes up a lot. We had a club, but apparently there's some issues with bringing that many weapons on campus. He sounds honestly exasperated. Joe manages to pick his jaw off the floor around the same moment Nikki finally steps into the room. Have you met my husband? The blush fades only slightly as they shake hands, and Nikki settles into the seat beside Joe. Medieval history, huh? Nikki shoots Joe a wink. They spend the next hour in a heated debate about siege tactics, a topic Robbie seems to be intimately familiar with. Both Nikki and Joe are utterly shocked and delighted to learn they don't have to cringe at a misguided bit of information once, and they end lunch with a promise to see his rapier and a standing invitation to join Robbie for drinks at a pub down the road. Joe likes to consider himself a bit of a social chameleon. He's had over 1,000 years of practice at showing up in a new town, introducing himself under a new name, and adapting to local customs and languages as well as the general changes of the times. He rarely settled down for any length of time, though, and usually not in a job or a place where he had quite so much contact with large groups of people. The life of a soldier was a transient one. Times seem to change a lot more quickly nowadays. The 20th century thundering into the 21st in a blink of an eye. It was harder to keep up. So when he got into an argument with a PhD candidate over a piece of 13th century poetry that he had helped write, goddammit, it wasn't so much of a surprise when he called the guy Quisby Sot in the middle of a string of more modern insults. A what? The blonde asked, freezing. Joe cursed himself silently for the slip-up, once again going through a mental list of excuses. But Jack, the Quisby sought in question, only shook his head and said, "You've been spending too much time with Robbie, mate." Joe had been confused by the comment for about a week. The time it took for Robbie to stub his toe on a desk in front of him and let out an impressive tirade of curses in Middle English. "Do you think he might be like us?" Joe asked Nikki that night. The question had been bouncing around his mind all day, and he hadn't dared voice it outside of the safety of their lounge room. Nikki shook his head, even if he'd been wondering the same thing. "We haven't dreamt of him. There's no way." Joe had known that, but it was nice to hear confirmed. They dismissed the idea with a silent agreement to keep a closer eye on Robbie Golding. Things were normal for the next few weeks, if you discounted the raven that would sporadically appear and follow Robbie around all day. Robbie truly did appear to be just a very eccentric history professor, and they'd all become good friends. They were walking to his flat for drinks on a Friday night after classes when the next strange thing happened. There was a shout from the alley behind the pub, a distinctly gruff male voice they recognized as Robbie's, and the two of them took off after it. They rounded the corner in time to find Robbie backed up against the brick wall of the pub, a trash bag left forgotten on the ground in front of him, facing off with an angry-looking woman in a long white coat. She held a wooden cross out in front of her, yelling words at Robbie that took a couple of seconds to place as Latin. It took a couple seconds longer to place the meaning of it. It used to be so easy. How long had it been since he'd spoken Latin? And Joe almost stumbled as he recognized the word for demon. Robbie had his hands up in front of him, looking more put out than afraid at the strange woman's cross. Their footsteps sounded on the concrete as they rounded the corner into the mouth of the alley, the woman speeding up her chanting. "Hey!" Nikki yelled. The woman spared them half a second glance and then threw the contents of her other hand at Robbie and braced herself. The instinctive no died on Joe's lips as the splash of liquid, "Please don't be acid," hit Robbie square in the face, and nothing happened. Robbie sputters, wiping a hand over his face. Nikki and Joe are almost on top of them now. Joe debates grabbing the woman and pulling her away, but she's stepping back even as he steps forward. Instead, they both fall into fighting stances, ready to step in. "Get away from him," Joe growls. The woman ignores them, staring confusedly at Robbie. Whatever she threw on him has clearly not had the desired effect. She raises the cross again and resumes chanting in Latin. Robbie huffs, "I'm not bloody possessed." The Latin, which Joe belatedly realizes is an exorcism, cuts off abruptly. Robbie blinks at the woman and recognition lights his eyes. "It's you," Robbie yells accusingly, focusing in on the woman. "Lady Constantine!" The recognition is apparently not shared. She frowns at Robbie, taking a step back. She still hasn't lowered the cross. "I thought we were over the whole stabbing me in a back alley thing," Rob grumbles, pushing up off the wall. Joe and Nikki both tense. Robbie spots it and waves them off, apparently not too concerned with the woman who has tried to stab him before. "I ain't no lady," a thick Cockney accent informs Robbie. She's still frowning at him, studying his face like Robbie's a particularly frustrating puzzle. Joe sees the moment the pieces click into place. "You're the wandering Jew," she shouts, cross lifting again as she points at Robbie like that explains everything. It does to Robbie, apparently, because he just frowns. "I'm not even Jewish," he sounds peevish, and Nikki wonders how often he's been accused of this before. "And I'm not the one who tried to stab you," the woman offers, crossing her arms in front of her chest. "Really?" Robbie frowns and leans forward, studying the woman's face. "Well, shit. Hell of a family resemblance." Oh, so one of the crazy exorcism girl's relatives had previously tried to stab Robbie in an alleyway. Joe's not sure if he's surprised. The woman nods at him, but doesn't drop her guard. Joe opens his mouth to ask what the hell is going on, but is interrupted by a now familiar caw. Joe catches a flash of black wings as Matthew appears, heading straight for Robbie. He lands on his shoulder, eyes on the woman. What did Robbie say? Constantine? It's a mark of how strange Joe's life is that he's no longer surprised by the bird's appearance. It's a mark of how strange Robbie's is that the woman seems to recognize Matthew. Her eyes land on the bird and then swing back to Robbie, widening. "You're the husband," she yells, clearly panicked. She doesn't give him a chance to answer, spinning on the spot to pace, shoving her flask and cross in her coat pocket as she goes. "Oh, fuck," she mutters, both hands scrubbing at her face as she spins on her heel again, pacing back. "Fuck, fuck, fuck." Robbie grabs the bottom of his shirt and drags it up to his face, cleaning off what Joe now realizes must be holy water, content to ignore the woman's breakdown. Nikki shoots him a look. Joe shrugs. He has no explanation for this. The woman spins on her heel again, rounding on Robbie. "I didn't know who you were, okay? I thought you were a bloody demon." She's still yelling, still angry. She lifts an accusing finger and turns to yell at Matthew. "I didn't know it was his goddamn boy toy, all right?" Her eyes are wild, and she takes a step closer to the bird. Matthew tilts his head in response, looking far more aware than a bird ought to. "I didn't mean anything by it, honest. No need to bring this up with the moody bastard." Matthew coughs. The woman throws up her hands and stalks away, mumbling something about nightmares as she storms past them. Neither Nikki nor Joe tried to stop her, still too dumbstruck to do much. She's nearly at the end of the alleyway when Robbie seems to catch up to her comment. "Oi!" he yells, watching her jolt to a stop and turn to glare at him. Joe wonders if he'll run after her, accuse her of something, ask her why she was talking to the bird. Instead, Robbie says, "Why am I the boy toy?" The woman gives him a flat look. Robbie huffs. They've finally gotten around to the dinner Robbie had been inviting them to for almost a month now, and Joe's had fun picking his way through Robbie's flat. There's at least two rapiers and a longbow, all in good condition, that Nikki's been admiring for the last hour or so. Joe's been nosing through his overflowing bookshelf, eyeing what he suspects to be a first edition Marlowe. It's relaxing, just the three of them. Joe blinks, and there's a stranger standing in Robbie's living room. Centuries of honing the instincts of a soldier has him reaching for a weapon before he can think, and he finds himself standing between the man and Nikki before he can stop swearing. The man standing before him is skin and bone, skinny limbs draped in black slacks and a long black coat that sweeps around heavy boots. So dark, the lightness of the room seems to bleed into it. He's pale, fresh-faced, with a mop of unruly dark hair piled on top of his head. He looks as if a strong gust of wind could knock him over, but those dark eyes meet Joe steadily with a flat stare that whispers warnings in the back of Joe's mind. He holds himself rigidly, shoulders pulled back and chin high, back impossibly straight. It reminds Joe of the kings of past, the kind of perfect posture only achieved by those raised in a position of power. He does not move from the spot he has appeared in, standing so still he does not even seem to breathe. "Who are you?" Joe demands when it becomes clear the stranger will not offer up anything. The man takes in Joe's weapon with cool eyes, assessing, but he does not move. He responds in a voice of rumbling thunder that is far too deep to belong to the twig of the man. "I mean you no harm, Yusuf Alkezani." Joe clamps his jaw shut to keep his mouth from dropping open and takes a step closer to Nikki, knife still raised. The stranger's expression does not change. It takes a second for Joe to notice. He has not answered the question. "Who are you?" he tries again. The stranger blinks, slow and deliberate, like he's, it's, thinking. "I go by many names." Still not an answer. A ruffle of feathers in the corner of his eyes draws his attention to the stranger's left, and he shifts his eyes long enough to see a raven perched on the man's shoulder, a very familiar-looking raven. "Is that Matthew?" He can almost hear the soft click in his mind as the puzzle pieces fall into place. "You're hot goth guy," Nikki blurts. The man furrows his brow slightly and tilts his head, his attention now on Nikki. Joe fights the urge to look at his husband, unwilling to take his eyes off the man, and sweeps his gaze over him again. While he's lacking any dramatic makeup, he certainly fits the description of goth, though Joe's mind revolts at the word hot. There's no doubt the man's attractive. Those cheekbones could cut glass. But it's a deep sort of ethereal beauty, something borderline on otherworldly. It takes Joe a second to recognize the term as the identifier used by Robbie's students. Wait, you're Robbie's husband? He can hear the shock in his voice. Hot goth guy blinks at him, taking a second to process the words, like he doesn't recognize the nickname. Then he nods. Of course he's Robbie's husband. Of course he'd be some mysterious being who can appear from thin air. Robbie chooses that moment to re-enter the room, crying a triumphant, "Found it!" and emerging from the stairs with a book of Persian poetry he'd told Joe he just had to read, clutched in one hand. He comes to a stumbling stop in the middle of the room when he notices the scene before him. He spots first Joe and Nikki standing by the door, and then his eyes brush over them to land on the stranger, his husband, who they are still pointing weapons at. Robbie's eyes flick to the door behind Joe's back and back to where his husband stands, clearly taking in the lack of other entry points. There's a tense second where all of them are staring at Robbie, waiting for the reaction. Joe waits for the yelling to start and thinks idly that it's a shame they will lose Robbie as a friend. He liked him. By now, it should not come as a surprise to Joe when Robbie does not react like he would expect. There is no yelling. There's not even a demand to lower the weapons or get away from his husband. Instead, he sighs deeply. Robbie looks straight at the stranger. "Did you use the door?" he asks deadpan. Oh, so this appearing randomly in the middle of the room thing has happened before. The stranger shakes his head. Robbie sighs again, and a hand comes up to rub his face. "We talked about this, love." The stranger shifts his weight. Joe lowers his weapon. Beside him, Nikki does the same. "You said I should not appear in front of mortals." Robbie nods. Joe registers the strange choice of wording too late to stop his next sentence. "They," the stranger lifts one elegant hand and gestures vaguely at Joe and Nikki, "are not mortal." Oh, shit. All of the tension that had leaked from his shoulders at Robbie's calm entrance reappears tenfold, and they both take a step towards the door, weapons in front of them again. Shit, shit, shit. How the hell did he know that? Who the hell is this guy? What? Robbie's mouth drops open in shock, and a small part of Nikki is relieved to know that he did not seem to know this already, that their friendship so far had not been some kind of con. Robbie swings around to face them, eyes wide. How old are you? Joe opens his mouth to deny it or to answer, he's not sure. The stranger saves him the trouble. Roughly a millennia. How the hell does he know that? Robbie's jaw is almost on the floor. Joe meets his eyes, trying to read his reaction as the news seems to sink in. A million different emotions flicker through his eyes before settling on something like suspicion. Strangely, it does not seem to be directed at them. Instead, he swings back around to the stranger. And how long have you known that? The stranger's brow furrows, confused by the question. Almost the same amount of time, he says, considering, since their first death. Nikki is almost at the door now, one hand wrapped securely in the back of Joe's belt as he slowly guides him backwards. He stumbles his next step as the revelation that the stranger is not only immortal, but older than they are. Robbie throws up his hands in exasperation, attention firmly directed on his husband. And you're only just mentioning this now? The stranger shifts his weight from foot to foot, looking slightly worried for the first time since he entered the room. Joe would be, too, if Nikki looked at him like that. It did not seem relevant. Matthew lets out a caw that sounds suspiciously like a laugh and flaps his wings, dislodging himself from the stranger's shoulders and landing on the back of the couch, clearly removing himself from the argument. Neither Robbie nor the stranger pay him any mind. It didn't seem relevant? Robbie seethes, voice rising. It occurs to Joe that he and Nikki seem to have been forgotten. The secret that both of them have died far more times than either of them can count, and has just been revealed to a newcomer is somehow not the focus of the conversation. Robbie looks livid. Because we've never had any conversation about immortality before, he practically spits, sarcasm dripping from each word. It's not like that's the only main focus every time you spoke to me for the first 600 years. Nikki and Joe both freeze in the doorway, hands linked. Nikki shoots him a look that Joe doesn't need words to read. Did Robbie just say what I think he did? The stranger's frown deepens the tiniest bit. We spoke about you, Hob, he tries. Robbie gives him a flat look. Don't you try that, he growls, lifting a finger to point directly at the other man's chest. Don't act like it never came up, you dick. What about the first time we met, With your little, hey, Hob, you can't die anymore speech. Joe's eyes widen. Yep, Robbie just said that. Is he one of them after all? But they never dreamed of him. He wants to ask, but he is unwilling to get in the middle of this argument. This is not a situation he's been in before, and he's unsure if he wants to attract any attention. You didn't think it would have been nice to know I wasn't the only one, Robbie continues.
I forgot, the stranger supplies, looking only slightly chagrined.
Robbie's voice, which was already loud, raises a pitch. You forgot? How do you forget something like that? The small part of Joe's brain that is not still stuck on our weird mate Robbie is immortal too, recognizes Robbie's words as a trap, and he is suddenly very, very grateful this is not going on between him and Nikki. He's not sure he could stand the love of his life looking at him like that. The stranger, who has demonstrated exactly zero aptitude for social cues thus far, misses this and opens his mouth to answer. Matthew, still perched on the back of the couch, seems to cringe.
I only concern myself with their group directly after their first death, and only for a short while. They were no longer in my thoughts when I met you.
Group? Did he know about all of them?
Their group, Robbie echoes, his voice deadly even.
Joe flinches. This time the stranger seems to realize his mistake. He keeps his mouth shut, reluctant to answer. Robbie's flat stare meets him, heavy in the silence. Nikki falls completely silent beside him, and Joe wonders if they should make a break for it after all. They would definitely be noticed now. But if Robbie the Immortal plans to wait out this strange ethereal being who is apparently older even than Nikki and Joe, then they may be stuck here forever if they don't. The stranger seems to come to the same conclusion.
Yes, he answers simply.
There's a long, drawn-out moment of silence as he refuses to elaborate. Robbie raises an eyebrow, looking fully prepared to tie him down and drag it out of him. Matthew buries his head under one wing. Joe thinks that would normally strike him as odd on a day he hadn't just discovered his mate from work, couldn't die, and was married to a being of some kind. The stranger blows out a tiny bit of air that Joe thinks might be a huff and continues.
There are five of them left. They were centuries old when our arrangement started. Only one has come into being since.
I had planned on mentioning it. The stranger pauses, eyes still on Robbie.
That's what you've got. I was going to mention it.
Robbie deadpans. The stranger shifts, his shoulders dropping just slightly. Robbie's eyes narrow before suddenly widening, like a thought just occurred to him. Panic flits across his gaze, and he abruptly changes topic.
Wait, they're not.
Robbie swallows, suddenly apprehensive, and Joe has to strain to make out his next words.
They're not yours, are they?
His? What the hell does that mean? The stranger's eyes widen and he shakes his head, the most movement he's made so far.
No, he says firmly. They are death's favor to destiny. I had no role in their making.
Robbie sighs out a breath of relief and the tension drains from his shoulders. He nods to himself, suddenly calmer. Joe tries not to think too hard about what it means that the being before him could make immortals.
Sorry, not that it matters. It's just you've never mentioned.
Robbie trails off, blushing. The stranger's face softens, and he takes a step forward,
a hand coming up to brush Robbie's cheek.
You are the only human I have any interest in, Hob Gadling.
If Joe had any doubt that the stranger wasn't human, this clears it up. Robbie all but melts into the touch, his own hand coming up to cover the stranger's. The love and adoration on his face is so bright, he's practically glowing.
What's Rose, then? Robbie quips, a sparkle in his eye.
The stranger makes another weird breath sound, and Joe is positive it's a huff this time.
My niece hardly counts.
This strange, otherworldly being has a niece. A human niece.
Of course he does.
Robbie laughs, shaking his head gently and leaning forward so his forehead rests against the stranger. When he speaks, all of the anger has leaked from the words, leaving only wry amusement behind.
You were going to mention it, huh?
The corners of the stranger's mouth tug down into a frown, his shoulders tensing minutely.
Other matters came up.
Robbie catches the movement, and both eyes narrow in suspicion.
Like what?
Silence. The stranger's jaw tightens, and for the first time since Robbie entered the room, his gaze sweeps back to Joe and Nikki. Nikki's hand squeezes Joe's. His eyes are guarded, and Joe suppresses the urge to back out of the room slowly. Robbie cuts in before he can make a decision, voice suddenly weary, attention back on the stranger.
When was the last one?
The stranger holds Joe's gaze for a second longer and turns to Robbie. His shoulders look hunched now, jaw clenched tightly. There's anger in his eyes. A kind Joe thinks he's seen before, the kind that borders on shame.
Before our meeting in 1889.
Booker. He really does know about them all. Understanding dawns, and then Robbie's face crumples. All of the anger drains out of him at once.
So just before...
The stranger nods, short and sharp.
Oh, Dove.
Robbie lifts his arms, and the stranger steps into his embrace. They wrap around each other as if each is afraid to let the other go, and Robbie drops his voice to a soothing whisper Joe can't make out. Joe finds himself wondering if he should leave for an entirely different reason. It feels like he's intruding in a private moment. On the couch, Matthew makes a noise that sounds awfully like he's clearing his throat.
Guys?
Joe jumps about a foot in the air, and Nikki lets out a strangled gasp.
Was that the raven?
You still have guests?
Yep, that was the bird. Robbie finally looks up like he's just remembering they're here.
Your bird can talk?
Joe yells, not quite able to keep the words inside. Robbie supplies, shooting an annoyed look at the bird in question. Matthew lifts one wing in an approximation of a shrug. Robbie sighs again and turns back to Joe and Nikki.
We should talk, he says, gesturing to the couch.
Joe stays by the door, hand firmly in Nikki's. Robbie frowns to himself like he's not sure what to say before coming to some kind of decision.
Alcohol?
Joe and Nikki nod in tandem. Robbie produces three bottles of wine and some vodka. Joe barely tastes it as he plows through almost a bottle to himself.
So we exist for a purpose. Someone. Destiny. Chose us for something?
Nikki slurs. Dream, as he's been introduced, nods.
Yes.
Joe has figured out he only speaks in longer sentences directly to Robbie. Nikki blinks, his drink-addled mind taking time to process this.
What's the purpose, then?
I do not know, Dream answers, not looking the least bit concerned, or the least bit drunk, despite hogging almost an entire bottle of wine to himself. Joe finds himself wondering if ethereal beings can get hangovers.
How do you not?
But not Robbie,
Joe asks, cutting off Nikki's rant before it can get started. Nikki looks affronted for half a second before looking curiously back at Dream, waiting on the answer.
No.
Matthew snorts from the couch beside Joe's head before he can start screaming.
Nah, man. Hob was a bet.
This time it's Joe's turn to blink confusingly.
A bet?
Oh, yeah,
Robbie agrees, grinning too wide. He jabs a finger at his husband, giggling.
He lost.
Robbie proceeds to explain the absurd circumstances of their first meeting, including when he unwittingly told Death herself that she was stupid, and their once-a-century meetings to see if Robbie wanted to die. "I suppose I shouldn't be too surprised he forgot to mention you lot exist," Robbie laments, cuddling into his husband. "After all, it took him over 600 years to give me his damn name." Nikki chokes on his wine.
600 years for a name?" Joe splutters. "How long until you guys started dating?"
"That's a recent development, only for the last 5 years."
"Oh, man. Over 600 years of sexual tension."
"And I thought our first meeting was weird," mutters Nikki.
The words are low, almost under his breath, but Robbie hears them. His ears perk up, and he swings around to face Nikki, half falling over Dream in the process.
"Why? How did you guys meet?"
Nikki smiles at him. He loves this story, and it's not often he gets the chance to tell it.
"In the Crusades."
Robbie's eyes widen, flicking back and forth between Nikki and Joe.
"But you're, he sputters.
Nikki bites on his lip. Joe hides his smile. Robbie gives up, throwing his arms up in surrender so suddenly he almost falls off the couch.
"And now you're married?"
Matthew burst out laughing. Nikki launches into the story, explaining in probably too much detail how they went from actively murdering each other to dating to married. Robbie regales them with stories from his first 100 years when he was convinced Dream was a demon he'd sold his soul to jumping to his defense when they were attacked by a Lady Constantine, not to be confused with Joanna Constantine, the woman who they'd caught pouring holy water over him. Nikki had laughed way too hard at Robbie's incredulous pout as he'd whined about the family's tendency to assume he was possessed. They finally got the story of why Robbie hated Shakespeare so much. Robbie had practically turned red when he described how Dream had taken one look at the playwright and walked out on him, apparently having better things to do.
"Boyfriend stealing dick," he mutters.
"Your jealousy is unfounded, Hob,"
Dream reasons, amused.
"Besides, we were not dating at the time."
Robbie flips him off. They polish off another bottle of wine, swapping stories about the witch trials. Nikki and Joe freeing those accused and waiting execution, Robbie skimming over details of being tried and drowned, and their involvements in both world wars and countless smaller ones. Nikki passes out on the couch, wondering if this means they can double date. His dreams are peaceful. The end.